Go here, there, and everywhere with Jeff Blair. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. On demand. The best NHL analysis and insight. It's what's on the lunch menu. Eat up. You're listening to Hockey Central on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Okay, let's do this one more time. Jeff American for Darren Millard alongside John Shannon and Damian Carroll.
Darren Millard doesn't run this show anymore.
So John is in for Nick Kiprios. I'm in for Doug McClain. Is that how this works?
Right. Yeah.
Well, if you're in for somebody, we, you know.
I guess so. Although the show rotates analysts more than it does hosts. Not so much in the playoffs.
What does "hurf" mean?
Well, I spent more time with Millard than you guys
did spend
recently.
A lot of time with Darren in the Stanley Cup final with Chicago and back and forth between Chicago and Tampa. Nonetheless.
I thought you guys were going to note how much healthier I am since the last time we worked together in Quebec City. That was
Damien, you're much healthier than yes. We worked last time in Quebec City. And you're smiling now, too. That's good.
Yeah, that was a tough go.
You still came out with us at night.
Again, you know what?
Still put in an honest shift.
The guy at home did not know you were sick. You're a trooper.
He was. The Memorial Cup, you were as sick as a dog.
It was unpleasant.
Boy, that feels like forever ago, doesn't it?
It does.
Who won it again?
I don't know.
Well, the coach is gone. Who cares?
Coach is gone. He's off to Toronto like everybody else in the CHL.
We didn't even get to talk about that. We have a million things we could talk about.
We can do that. We can do that.
Well, we got 60 minutes here, guys. Scott Sam is going to join us, VP of Hockey Operations
for Hockey Canada.
He's going to stop by, Matt, like 10 minutes, I think? Five minutes.
Okay,
Scott's going to be stopping by. The big news of the day coming up the Hockey Canada press conference. Doug Armstrong is the general manager, flanked by Ken Holland.
I read that on John Shannon's Twitter.
He didn't read Bob Murray.
Well, he's got a thing against Bob Murray.
Hey,
doesn't like Anaheim.
No.
I don't like their arena for sure.
He doesn't like their camera positions.
Hey, no one does.
Hey, by the way, just after all the stuff started to come out last night, I made some phone
calls.
Yeah. The Americans are probably going to decide their management team in August with a September announcement. And then the two other teams that are really up for grabs, the Euro team and the under-24 team, they're going to have an announcement in September of who's running their program.
Who's going to run the under-24 team?
I know who's volunteered. I mean, you have to think.
Did we see the Tampa coach there?
Well, but that was the story early on.
Wouldn't he be coaching Team USA?
I don't think so.
Why not?
Because I have heard his name for the under-24 team.
Isn't that a little bit of a junior position? Just as you would say, sorry, you can't. You were saying before Connor McDavid, Nathan McKinnon, yeah. Stand down. We got the big boys.
It's an entry level position. But what? Hey, here's the thing.
Entry level position for every great 24-year-old
international entry level position. But here's the thing. What if they win?
Well, they're not going to win, but they're going to. I think they'll win a game or two.
Wait a minute. No. Wait. What if
you think
they're
going to win the whole thing?
You look at the nature of this tournament. We're not talking about best out of seven. We're talking about ones and duns.
Yeah, who's going to play goal?
That's a very good question.
John Gibson.
There you go.
All you need is someone to get hot.
And let's face it, on the international stage, he's done that.
And how much would they be?
I think the Ducks would like him to get hot for them in the playoffs first.
Yes.
You think? Freddie Anderson was.
Freddie Anderson was good. They're set up for a while.
The whole discussion process between USA Hockey and Hockey Canada and the National Hockey League about who runs that under-24 team. Do you have to be a dual citizen? What do you do? Who becomes that key guy? And we all know guys that have worked on both sides of the borders that want to be involved in that club more than anything.
But this is no simple thing.
No, I know.
I mean, USA Hockey, and Jeffy knows this because he likes this kind of intrigue. The stuff that goes on there with the players that get picked for national teams, players who choose to go play major junior versus college versus USHL.
It's been nasty.
Jim Johansson
and those guys are going to have their own team. That's Team USA.
Okay, but who's going to pick this team?
Oh, they're going to pick a general manager.
They're going to be involved.
I don't think they are. I think that's part of the process. I mean, we should probably
they're going to be involved.
We should probably phone Bill Daly and ask him how that, once the person's named, is he allowed?
And
is
Bill
he allowed?
Will say, guys, it's summer.
Well, oh no, yeah,
guys! We have the awards on Wednesday. We got the draft on Friday. You're bugging me about this on a Monday.
Yeah, well, because one of the teams named their general manager today. Are you kidding me?
So the ball is now rolling. Want to handicap the coaches now that the
for Team Canada?
Stuff? Yeah.
Yeah. Mike Babcock has to get first dibs just out of loyalty after winning the last two Olympics. And if he says, guys, I got my hands full with this Leaf team.
Oh, we think. Be a long for Mike.
It will be his second training camp. Maybe he wants to stay away.
Yeah. then you're into Joel Quenneville.
Todd McClellan.
Daryl Sutter mentioned today by Doug Armstrong. Alain Vigneault mentioned today by Doug Armstrong. So there's a short list for you right there.
Any surprises, John? Could there be a Lindy Ruff in the mix here? Someone like that?
You wonder again that Lindy has had some Hockey Canada exposure.
Dave Tippett coached at the 2014 Worlds. Mm-hmm. He had Paul Maurice and who were the assistants? Paul Maurice and somebody were the assistants. So I would think Tippett would be another name who might be part of the overall picture.
I think we have Scott Salmon standing by if I'm
well, maybe he'll tell us who'll be the coach.
So, yeah,
we'll tell
ask us. Him. Tell what exactly is
going
on.
Give us the short list, Scotty.
VP of Hockey Operations for Hockey Canada, Scott Salmon, joins us. First of all, congratulations on a wonderful day for Hockey Canada, naming the management team, which does include you as well, Scott. First order of business now becomes what?
You know, we're going to meet today. We're going to start meeting today and really go through an overview of the event itself, what we're looking at, times, start to set our meeting schedule as a management group, scouting schedule, those sort of things. We'll talk a bit about coaches today. We'll talk about support staff and then spend a lot of time talking about players just from the recent playoffs and then obviously the World Championships as well.
Wow, you're going to go right in today to talking about players, huh?
Yeah, you know, actually we've had a brief meeting before in Florida around the GM meetings and started talking about players. This will be depth chart number two for us already. So we wanted to have a depth chart started before the playoffs so we could take a look at what guys were thinking at that time. Now we get an opportunity to depth chart number two, which is after the World Championships, after the playoffs, and see how thoughts change. And I think it's a great approach as you lead up into March. You know, you probably have three or four different depth charts. You can look back, you can look at how playoff performances might have influenced that roster, and then be able to make your final decision in March.
I like that Taves guy.
He's good.
87 for Pittsburgh. Else, keep an eye on him.
Now you got a problem. Who's going to be captain? I mean, this is awful.
Well, what are you going to do? Take the C away from Crosby? Is that what your plan is now?
Listen, they got a meeting today. They'll probably have to figure it out. Then you can phone us back, Scotty.
Yeah, you got it.
So the one thing about this tournament, and even with all the Hockey Canada experience you've had, one city, one arena, it makes a huge difference, doesn't it?
I think it does. You know, but you're in Canada, and the other thing that'll be different is it's not an international event in terms of IHF per se. It's more NHL, NHLPA, you know, and waiting to see how that all unfolds. So, you know, we're fortunately the number one seed in the world now, but I don't think that translates to this event. So who's going to get the Leafs dressing room? Who's going to get the other dressing rooms? Is it going to be spread out? Those are all things that'll be interesting to see how that works, knowing that, you know, we want to make sure it's equal for everyone in terms of NHL players. So there's some interesting dynamics for sure. It's different. Being in Toronto will be exciting for our group for sure, and all out of one rink will be interesting, but it'll be great.
Scott Salmon joins us from Hockey Canada. It seems, you know, we were just talking about this a couple of seconds ago, John Damian and myself, we're just talking about how it seems, even perhaps just optically or just feels this way, that this tournament represents in some ways a changing of the guard from a management point of view. Do you think the coaching staff will reflect that vibe as well?
I think it's a great question. You know, I think if you go back and look at 2010 to 2014, there's always been an interest to have some new blood into the system, to have some new ideas, to continue to push forward. And if you go back as far as, you know, 2002 when we had a management group that stayed the same into 2004 World Cup and then the same into 2006, and how that didn't necessarily translate into the success we were hoping for, I think that new blood, those new ideas, some fresh concepts and just, you know, that excitement of doing it for the first time, I think that really brings something and adds something to the group. So, you know, I don't think you'll see a complete changing of the guard in terms of coaches, but I think you'll see some new people as part of that staff.
It's been 12 years since the last World Cup. I mean, you've had a generation almost of players come through the system who now see the Olympics as the number one thing. World championships as a way to, if not the next most important thing, but as a way to get involved in the Olympics. Do you think there's going to be, not an education process, but a process of getting players to sort of put this new event within perspective and on sort of their list of things that matter to them as NHL players?
I think, you know, the entire world needs to do that. And from our federation to the others, and where does it fit? Anytime you have the opportunity for best on best, I think players get excited about that, especially the time of the year that we're going to have. You know, it's the only event that happens in September when players are fresh, as opposed to either halfway through the year or at the end of the year. And I think that brings a real interesting twist to the event and makes the event really exciting in terms of having the best players at their best. So where does it fit in the whole rank of things? I think it's different, and I think that's a good thing. It's not the Olympic Games. It's, you know, it's not the World Championships. It's a different event on North American ice in Canada. And I think, you know, players will be excited. I know they'll be excited anytime they get the opportunity to play internationally, represent their country, whether it's Canada or U.S. or Sweden or Finland. I think they all get excited, especially in a best-on-best scenario. So I think it's going to be great.
Scotty, there will be a training camp, and how long will there be rules and say how long you can train and practice with the team?
There will be, an outline of rules and how many exhibition games you'll play, how long and when those players will come in, and kind of some guidelines around what you'll do with them. That information is still being worked on. We've still been in discussions with the NHL and the PA on exactly how that looks. We'll talk a little bit today about how we would like to see that to look, but then we'll go back and make sure that that works within the NHL and NHLPA structure.
Scott Salmon of Hockey Canada joins us. And moments ago on the TV side, we just saw Mario Lemieux, 2004, skating around with the World Cup as Canada beats Finland. Please tell me there will be a new trophy.
I think that's a good question. A lot of people have asked about it. I asked today, where is the trophy? And I guess it is at the Hockey Hall of Fame. So I wouldn't be surprised if there'd be a new trophy.
In your mind, as a hockey person, and you know, and I know you've got responsibilities for Hockey Canada, is it incumbent upon the NHL, the NHLPA, to make this more of a regular event? Because I think part of the challenge for this, Scott, is coming out of 12 years of hibernation and saying to people, look, this matters and here's why. Do you think they really need to find a way to make this a regular event?
I think that that's part of the interest. I think there's a real interest from the National Hockey League and the NHLPA to explore international hockey and what that means exactly. I'm not sure whether that's a partnership with the IHF in Olympic Games, in World Cup, in World Championships. Bottom line, I think they have a real interest in you know, being involved in those conversations and growing the game internationally, and I think that they should. Whether it means that this is an event that happens every second year, every 4 years around the Olympic Games, I'm not sure. I certainly think that people are going to wait and see how this goes over and what the thoughts are coming out of it, and then look at a longer-term international plan that involves the NHL and NHLPA.
So when would you expect, or has it even been discussed yet, when you announce a roster?
Yeah, that's one thing we've talked a lot about. It looks like we will announce 16 players in around the 1st of March, and then we would wait until into June to name our last seven, and those are some parameters that have been set. I think there's an opportunity for countries, if they wished, to announce all 23 players on March 1st. I think from our perspective, we'll probably wait. And those first 16, there's probably, we could probably sit down right now, all of us, and talk about who those 16 are.
And we'd all disagree.
I like that Taves guy.
We might agree on 10 or 12.
Hey, Scott,
but it's the last seven.
You've seen a lot of formats internationally. This one is interesting. You've got four teams and two groups, two top teams. There's no crossover. They play in two semifinals, and the two winners go to a 2-of-3 final. What do you think of that?
From a North American perspective, I love it. I think our players are way more conditioned to that series concept, where, you know, as opposed to that one-off. I mean, we've been fortunate in the last couple Olympics, but boy, you get down to that one game playoff, it's difficult. I think the best of three gives you at least an opportunity to, you know, to find the best team through a little bit of a playoff series. So I like it from our format. I'm not sure how the European teams would see it,
But from where we are, I think it benefits us.
Would that change your evaluation process in any way, shape, or form? Or do you still say to yourself, it's, you know, it's not quite one and done, but it is only a couple of games. Would the fact that it's, you know, two out of three, would that factor into player evaluation at all?
I don't think at all. No, I think you're just going to take the best players, and whether you got to win one or two, I think it's the same thing. We're fortunate we got so many great players, and a lot of them who have international experience playing in those one-offs, and obviously NHL playoffs. So we're fortunate. We've got all the bases covered in that sense, where other teams maybe are more used to a, you know, a one-off structure that they grow in with in the international game.
We talked a little bit before you came on about the Young Stars. And what is Hockey Canada's role within that Young Stars team?
I think it's a partnership with USA Hockey, the NHL, and the NHLPA. We've had some initial discussions on what that team looks like, what that management and coaching staff looks like, and that's going to continue to evolve as we have more discussions. I think there's a real desire and appetite to you know, have the best managers, the best coaches, and the best players, regardless of nationality. So I don't think you're going to see an equal split on any of the staffs or the players. I think it's just going to be the best people kind of putting their nationality aside and working for the best of that team. It'll be interesting. I think it's going to be really interesting.
I guess my follow-up to that is once you appoint a manager, then it becomes his responsibility and he's not accountable to Hockey Canada and USA Hockey?
I think we work together, certainly. Yeah. But it certainly is different than your national team. There's going to be some time spent on process and how that works. I think that management group will not work independently, John. They'll have to work collectively with USA Hockey, Hockey Canada, and the NHL and NHLPA, to be honest with you, and some parameters we'll have to put in place for those guys. But at the end of the day, they'll have to make clear decisions.
Sounds like a tough job, Scott. You got four bodies you're going to have to listen to. You know how hard it is sometimes within one federation.
Yeah, and I think it maybe sounds more difficult than it is, and maybe I'm making it sound that way. I think once you have your parameters and a little bit of your marching orders and, you know, how you can operate, I think it's quite simple that they're going to go and operate. No different than our guys that we have here. I mean, we hire Doug Armstrong, Kenny Holland, these guys to make decisions and operate teams. You know, we put some parameters in place and then we let them do their job.
We talked about this before you came on as well, Scott, with players under 24, you know, not playing for Team Canada, who have been loyal to the Hockey Canada program for pretty much all of their career growing up. You think it'll be tough for the Connor McDavids and the Aaron Ekblads and the Nathan MacKinnons to play against Canada?
Yeah, you know, it'll certainly be different for them. And I had a few discussions when we were in Toronto last week with some of those players. And I think it'll be easy for them to play against other countries, a little more difficult to play against their own country and how that'll feel just looking across the ice, seeing the Canada logo or the U.S. logo. At the end of the day, I think they're competitive young men. They want to win. Mm-hmm. And as much as it'll be different for them, I think it'll still be real unique and a real exciting team, that U23 team.
Well, Scott, on that, we'll bid you good afternoon. You have a management team of six, but I believe you have, by a last count, 30 million other people you can consult with that would love to share their opinion of what Team Canada would look like. Best of luck.
Yeah, appreciate it. Thanks for having me, guys.
Scott Salmon of Hockey Canada.
I like that Taves guy.
You do, eh? You're pretty high on him.
I think you are insane if you think...
Shows promise, but you know what? Relax, focus.
No. I want to go back to this thing about how John thinks that the NHL, NHLPA, Hockey Canada,
and USA Hockey,
USA Hockey are all going to get together, sing Kumbaya, pick one
hands.
Guy and say, you do whatever you want, because we know. Are you kidding
me? It's the only way it'll work.
It may not work.
That's my point.
You know what, though?
Any manager with his right mind says, if I'm going to run the under-24 team.
Let me give you an example. Ron Wilson has just taken a position with USA Hockey, correct?
Correct.
He is now running the junior team.
Yeah. Or as Jeff likes to call it, under 20.
U20.
Because that's Jeff.
That's right.
We have U18, U17, we have U20. Come on.
Anyways, all of a sudden, USA Hockey says, that's who we want running the under 23 team because he's our guy and we want him working with our best. And Hockey Canada says, are you kidding me?
Exactly.
Are you absolutely gone insane?
Yeah.
I'm with you.
We want Todd McClellan because Mike Babcock, that's who we want coaching this because he's coaching all those good young players.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, they'll figure this out real quick.
That is my point. You need one person.
No, you said they're all going to get along great.
No, I said once you hire that manager, you have to let him do his job, and you can't take the phone calls from, you know, from Jim Johansson or from Scotty saying, by the way, we really want you to take 15 Canadians and 8 Americans. That manager has to be able to do what he needs to do for his team to win. Mm. Otherwise, it will go.
Good luck to you.
The point that you raised about scheduling of this thing, I think, is a crucial one. In that, you know, we've seen, and I guess the genesis of what turned into the World Cup was the Canada Cup in 1976. And for a while, it was on a regular schedule. Thank you very much. And it's kind of gone away. We haven't seen it for 12 years.
I was seven.
A cynical hockey
John
observer.
Just got depressed.
I know. Sorry, John. A cynical hockey observer would say, well, 2004 was more about the NHL and the PA loading up their war chest for a lockout more than it was about a hockey tournament.
I certainly felt that way.
Did you feel that way?
Yes, I did.
This one, of course, is a completely different vibe. And, you know, John, you've talked about, you know, the international competition and the scheduling thereof. This one does need to have a plan.
Well,
you think?
I think part of this is the NHL and the NHLPA saying to the IIHF and the IOC, guys, if we have to, we can do this on our own.
So this is about leverage.
They are still frustrated over what they're allowed to do, not allowed to do, everything revolving, and very frustrated about where does all the money go from that event?
Well,
why doesn't some of it come to us?
Hey,
since we're giving you all the talent.
As much as we look at Gary and Bill as guys that are driving this, Donald Fehr, from the beginning of his tenure at the Players Association, former member of the USOC, loves the international game and, you know, the World Baseball Classic, the whole, I mean, this is a guy that has vision for joint revenue worldwide. I think we're going to see within the next 10 years important events all over Europe again, maybe even in Asia, with this leadership group.
Being joined now by a key piece of the management staff for Team Canada at the World Cup of Hockey 2016 is Bob Murray, also general manager of the Anaheim Ducks. He joins us now. Bob, thanks for joining us today.
Does he know that John left him off his
I don't know.
Why don't we ask Bob?
I know Bob. Bob would be thrilled that I left him off. I know Bob well enough.
First of all, Bob, congratulations. Congratulations on the appointment. I'll ask you the same question we just asked Scott Salmon a couple of seconds ago. First order of business from your point of view would be what?
Well, I think we're going to meet, and we've sort of gone over a preliminary list of the players, but, you know, as tough as the players are going to be, the coaching staff could be just as difficult. So I think we'll address a few of those things here and start talking about them today.
Bob, how do you manage to think about Canada's team and still worry about the Ducks? And it's one of those ones that we always wonder when all the managers that are involved, but you're now in a place where your team's a very successful National Hockey League team. You have Canada's interest now for the next 12 months. How do you keep them in order?
Well, it's a great challenge. There's some worry there a little bit that you got to keep one priority ahead of the other, but anytime you get to do something for Canada, you got to do it. So I haven't had many opportunities, so it's a great opportunity, and I have enough time to do both of them.
Now we know Armstrong and Holland; they were involved in the last couple of Olympics. Rob Blake was involved with the World Championships. I think you were involved in one before. How did it come about this time that they contacted you? Were you surprised? Were you pleased? How did it work this time?
I was surprised. Tom Lenny called me. And then Dougie Armstrong called me right after that. And, yeah, I was involved in one in Slovakia there a few years ago with Rob Blake. And I was excited as heck. It was something you kind of, I never got to do that, or the player wasn't good enough. So this is an opportunity to get involved in these things because, you know, as a kid, you watched the old Canada Cups and stuff. They're just fantastic. So I loved watching them. So this is a great experience for me.
Is this something you'd want to do more of, working with Hockey Canada internationally?
We'll see how it goes. Yeah, I think there's a, I think you can do it for so long because it is time consuming and there is, and you care and you get right into it. As you saw with Stevie, you could tell at the end with Stevie that he was, it was time for him to, okay, I've done enough and it's time for me to back off. And so, if he you're ever as successful as that, then you've done your duties. And I think we all should, well, it's our chance, give it our best shot, try to keep winning in Canada and go from there.
You touched on the fact that you're a former player, and on your NHL team, you have two of the best players Canada's ever produced, and they've won gold. When they came home with gold, was there a little pang of jealousy in your discussion with them about, hey, what was it like? And did that create a desire for you to be involved?
Oh, yeah. There was a... I was proud of them, first of all. I was proud of them how they played, and I was proud of them for representing their country so well. And I was full of questions about how it was and how it was going on. And so it was quite a good relationship with those two guys. So it was quite interesting talking to both of them after the two different Olympics.
John was obviously referencing Ryan Getzlaff and Corey Perry. Right. You have a lot of other talented players who could be involved. As the manager of the Ducks, given the timing of this versus the middle of the season like the Olympics, when it comes to injuries and how you think it'll set your team and your players up, does this format and the timing of this make you any more nervous that, geez, I hope something, you know, doesn't go wrong for our team, or we're taking a risk by having our players involved?
Well, I like this format better. I like it. We're going to have healthy players to start with. And hopefully everybody comes out of it healthy, which is to your point. But I always, the Olympics for me is, it's, let's put it this way. In the last two Olympics, Anaheim has been very well represented at those Olympics. And we've come out of those Olympics when our players have gotten back, and it hasn't gone well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've had lots of guys. So I'm kind of liking this way better right now.
If you could handicap it, Bob, by position, which do you think you guys will have the toughest time with in deciding?
Oh, jeepers. I think just from our first meeting way back at the GM meetings, and I think there's so many good players. I think it's the chemistry of what you're trying to put together. So it's unfortunately, it could be where some player, you don't think his chemistry is going to fit right with other players, and that's why he could lose an opportunity. So I think it's tough. I've gone over it multiple times, like in the playoffs, when you're trying to find something for yourself to do, you start diddling again, and it's just, oh boy, we've got some tough decisions. So it's all over the lineup. I couldn't pick, you know, as I said, the coaching staff. That's just, we got a whole bunch of really good coaches right now, so it's going to be tough.
Another big event on the horizon for all 30 NHL teams, and that's Friday in the NHL draft. Last year, in a lot of ways, and we've seen this with Anaheim before, where Cam Fowler falls, Nick Ritchie fell right into your lap. That looks like it's a home run pick. What's your feeling on the draft this year? It seems as if, you know, after, you know, 1 and 2, it's kind of jump ball for about 4 or 5 picks. How deep is this draft, and how do you like yourself where you're positioned right now, and where you're selecting?
Well, luckily for us, I think this is a deep draft. We like, there's lots of players we like in this draft, and I'm going to try to be active to get us a little higher, but there's lots of teams trying to do that. The talk has finally started to pick up now that the Stanley Cup is over with, so I think there's going to be some movement within some teams, and I'm going to do the best I can to get us up a little bit higher if I can.
Bob and I had a long chat about this one night in Winnipeg about the draft and how excited he is about the players involved. But, Bob, it seems to me that players that get drafted now seem to be, and you've had this experience yourself with one of your young defensemen, or two of them, that they are ready to play maybe within 1 or 2 years of drafting. If that's the case, is it more possible now to draft for need as opposed to best player available, because you may be drafting a guy who might be in your lineup within 2 years?
I think, as you referred to, I think that has changed. I grew up under Jack Davis in the Chicago, great old scout, and he always, Bobby, you always draft the best player available. Well, we've had a few discussions within our staff lately and saying, okay, these guys, you referred to my team, to Fowler and Lindholm, and maybe, I have a couple more this year who might be ready to play in my lineup. And So you may look at where your positional needs are and say, no, we're taking a sentiment over a defenseman, let's say, at this point in time. And you know, I'm not saying that's what we're, but you could come down to doing something like that, whereas the old day, it was always take the best player available.
You also have one of the most coveted unrestricted free agents as of July 1st in Matt Bolesky. Do you see a chance of signing him before that?
We've made another offer. It's a bumpy road right now. I'm not going to lie. We're going to try one more shot at it, and then we'll have to move on. You got to protect yourself against. It's not just the contract this year; it's what it does to your team in future years. You're probably going to be looking 1, 3, 5, 7 years out, and you got to see what that contract does to you and the term of it. And there's lots of things that go into this that just don't. People know, you know, they don't see right off the bat. So this is the organization has some very difficult decisions coming up here in the next 2 or 3 months.
When you talk about protect yourself, you wouldn't rule out trading him before July 1st then?
If it looks like there's not a chance this is going to get done, I would think about that, yes.
Okay.
Try to get some sort of asset. Well, if I knew I was dead, if I knew it was just dead and not chance going to happen, then sure. Sure, then you look at that. Definitely try to get an asset out of it.
On that, we'll let you go. Bob, thanks, as always, for stopping by. Congratulations on today. Best of luck Friday, either it's at 27 or if you're able to move upwards in the NHL draft.
All right. Thanks, guys. Good talking to you.
Bob Murray, named as one of the executive for Hockey Canada, for Team Canada, rather, the World Cup of Hockey 2016, also the general manager of the Anaheim Ducks. Doesn't look like Bolesky's going to stick around Anaheim.
Well, we've got to wait till Friday, I guess.
With that issue, and I think we're going to start seeing that be more. I think we've really seen an evolution how people look at the cap. It used to be, and I think we're seeing that in Philadelphia, mm-hmm. where the idea was, look, we've got to be a cap team. We've got to spend cap. Now teams are seeing whether it's tagging white rights is what Bob was referring to, or the ability to be in a position to add players when they're available. If you have no cap space, you can't. And I think teams are now starting to see the cap in a different way, that maybe being at the cap all the time isn't in your best interest.
And I mean, how long has it finally taken for it? Because teams have been warned about this forever. Well, since the cap came in, don't spend to the cap. Buy yourself some space.
And with a player like Matt Bolesky, who had a terrific season, but really it's one season
it's a
so
risk.
Far.
Yeah.
We're now looking at teams with really difficult contracts to move. If you sign a guy and and I think it's those ones sort of $4 million, $5 million in there.
You know what
that
it
get
is?
Really difficult. You can always trade a $9 million player.
That's it.
You know,
that's what I was going to
say. Try trading a $4 million player who's coming off an 11-goal season.
You don't get killed paying the big boys. You know, your top 6 forwards, your top 4D, specifically your top 2D. Where you get killed is if you make quote unquote mistakes with your bottom 6.
And the GMs that are really good ones like Bob Murray say, you know what, Matt, we understand, we'd love to have you, but if we don't, I got 9 other guys down in the minors and they're ready to come and they'll be you. And that's what you've got to have to position yourselves well. And good luck to Matt Bolesky. I hope he gets a gigantic contract because you like to see his story mm-hmm. and you like to see a guy achieve in a contract year and get paid.
Or do you take a hometown discount to play for a really good organization?
No.
Some guys will, but Brandon Saad might.
I think careers are too short.
You think Saad's taking a haircut? I don't know. It sounds like he's lining up for a big payday.
Hey, listen, I truly believe that he's going to get some offer sheets. He's going to get offer sheets. I think he and Dougie Hamilton are in line to get an offer sheet.
I think we saw with Chicago with Nick Chalmerson back in 2010.
Yeah.
They'll match.
Cost him the goaltender, though.
Yeah, and that's the way it can be used.
You could say the strategy for San Jose, was the way to get the goaltender was to offer sheet the defense.
Well, and that's why the Ranger forward, whose name escapes me right now, JT, what's his name?
Miller.
So, yeah, there, thank you. Why was I thinking JT? Anyways, you know, this with where the Rangers are in the cap and the decisions they have to make with players like San Luis, could you put pressure on them by making them pay him and therefore shake another player free? That's what San Jose did.
We've heard about the strategic offer sheet for years.
But San Jose did it.
San Jose's the one team. Doug Wilson was the one general manager that said
we're going to see offer sheets, guys.
Well, you think we're going to?
I do.
More than other years?
I mean, more is a I mean, one is more than other years.
One's a bonanza.
The answer is yes.
Shouldn't we, if it really were a system, we got to go, I guess, Jeffy?
Yeah, we got to go.
But Unless you want to go another hour. Yeah, of course. In a system that really worked, wouldn't we see 10? Wouldn't we see a dozen?
Probably.
If you're really competing.
I mean, the dollar figure and the compensation are the one, you know, I mean, yeah. That becomes the issue.
We do have to hustle. We can pick up the conversation, though. We'll talk a little bit about the Edmonton Oilers dismissing some longtime scouts over the weekend in advance of the NHL draft, and more on the NHL draft as we continue. Hockey Central at noon. Boy, that was a long segment. We've been on for an hour, I guess, already, guys. John Shannon alongside Damian Cox. Here's truly Jeff Merrick back on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Network simulcast stateside on the NHL Network. Back in a moment.
You thought Millard, Kiprios, and McLean worked a lot already. Now they'll work anytime you want. Subscribe to the Hockey Central podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. On demand. Now, more Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Welcome back to Hockey Central at noon. Jeff Merrick, John Shannon, and Damian Cox. Busy break there where I started doing a Reddit AMA.
What does that mean?
Ask me anything. And you got changed. Look at you, Dapper Dan.
I'm still the same guy underneath.
I know, John. Looking sharp. Let me ask you one of the questions here.
I went to the washroom.
Yeah, congratulations.
That's a little too much information.
Very good. Okay, so we got changed, started an AMA, and Damian had a squirt. Very good. Welcome to Hockey Central at noon.
See, you didn't have to elaborate.
That was too much.
That was
past the
line. You know, we have, you know, actually, I...
The problem is we spent all that time in Quebec City.
We're too comfortable with each other now after the MasterCard Memorial
Cup. And if Warner was here.
Well, I know. Oh, forget it. If One Touch
if
is here.
If Ted was here.
Want to tell the Ted story?
No. We'll save for Ted.
We could get Ted golfing one day.
Here's a question that just came into me at the Reddit AMA.
And what does that mean again?
I don't know what that is.
Ask me anything. Why don't you say that?
What's Reddit?
What is Reddit?
Oh, you guys, it's 2015.
Don't give me this, you guys. Why don't you just get off your high horse and tell us what it is?
Think of it as a giant chat room.
So it's like Twitter Twitter with other stuff.
Here, this is Reddit.
Oh, so it's a different format.
So what was so hard to explain about that?
Show the camera. Don't show me. Show the camera.
In 2015, this is what.
Okay, come on, Jeff.
I'm going to give you a shock here, Jeff.
What's up?
The vast majority of people out there have no idea what Reddit is. So why don't you tell them?
Yeah. Reddit. Think of it as a giant chat room.
Okay. So what's the question
now on the draft?
Tell us.
One that has come in, which you, as a close follower of said NHL entry draft, did you, John Shannon? Who do you think is most likely to sneak into the top 10 and who do you think is likely to fall out of it?
Okay, I think most likely...
That's a hard question.
My response was Pavel Zacha to get into the top 10.
See, I think he's in the top 10.
You already think he's in? All right.
I was surprised you put Lawson Crouse at 10 on your mock draft.
Yeah. See, I think there's 11 players and then after that. So I'm going to go beyond that 11 and think about... I wonder if it could be a player like... Denis Gurianov or Evgeny Svechnikov, one of the Russian wingers, depending on team's comfort level with Russian players.
Sneak into the top 10.
Sneak in. I think that's possible.
Gurianov
I don't
a
think the goalie.
U18. Svechnikov was outstanding, one-man band in Cape Breton.
I could be wrong. I mean, I don't think they will because I think the top 11 is basically set. It's just
you got Meyer in the top 11?
I think so. I'm trying to remember how it goes.
To me, he appears to be a barometer for this draft in many ways. About
Timo Meier of Halifax?
Yeah. And, I mean, I've seen lots of stuff that suggests that he's, you know, 8 or 9, and then you see stuff that he's dropped a little bit. So I wonder about Timo Meier.
The one guy I wonder who could slip out, and not really because of any deficiencies on his own, is Matthew Barzal. Of the Seattle Thunderbirds.
Oh, he had a great second half coming back from the knee
injury. Well, not a great second half. He had a good second half and a really good U18.
Yep.
Okay. But then people evaluate that, a really strong, you know, and put that in context. Czechs didn't have anything, you know. So you always evaluate these things. Who is he playing with? But it's not really about him to me. To me, he's like Marner. If all of a sudden people start making their moves on defensemen, then people say, oh, the defensemen are gone. I'm going to go for one of the big wingers. And all of a sudden, it's the 11 pick, and Matt Barzal or Mitch Marner's there, not because they're not good players.
But because it was a run on defenseman, and all of a sudden Zach Werenski's going six.
Yeah, that bingo. That's what I mean. Right. So that's why I wonder about Barzal. And because of the seasons he's had, the injury. Now, whether it's him or Oliver Shillington or give me another guy who missed a lot of time. Oh, Colin White of the USA program.
Jacobs Borrell in St. John.
Guys missed who missed big chunks of time. It's not like they haven't been seen. Because these kids have been followed for years. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be the team who really liked them when they were a 16-year-old is going to say, don't worry, I know who they are.
Barzal, though, all that time, though, Barzal never dropped. Like, he was always in that, you know, at 5, 6, 7 area, wasn't he? I mean, he hasn't really...
The lowest I've seen Barzal anywhere is 11, 12.
Yeah, I think that's
he's never. To your point, John, he's never really fallen that far, and, if at all. And
positionally, he's a center. He's a pure center.
He's a pure center. He had, you know, the layoff with the knee injury, horsing around the dressing room.
Sure.
And when he came back, there were about five. It took him about 5 games to get back into it. And then he just had a rocket.
And they were a fine team. And that's the thing on Zacha. You mentioned Pavel Zacha.
Yeah.
One of the interesting things about him is if you're a believer that you go for defenseman and center, is Pavel Zacha center. He played left wing and right wing at the under-18s and played very well. He sees himself as a center. People wonder, is he a winger? If he's a winger, does that change where he might go in the draft?
Yeah. The other question for me is people don't think size is a factor anymore. I still think size is a bit of a factor. You talk about Marner. If you'd look at one thing about Marner, his size, you look at Travis Konecny, is there an issue with his size? I mean, and again, that
and both those guys concussed
during
the season. Yeah, and so, people are going to,
But you know what? People said the same thing about Logan Couture with the injuries, the concussions in junior. Can you keep up at the NHL level? Last time I checked, Logan Couture is pretty
good.
NHL.
Yeah.
No, it's one GM explained to me, he said, I think he was talking about Nick Merkley. He said, I don't see him as a small player. I see him as a short player.
Mm.
And what he evaluates is how do guys play with their size? Because you've got big guys.
Who don't use it.
Paul Bittner of the Portland Winterhawks might be an example to many as a big guy who doesn't necessarily use his size. Mm-hmm. Then you've got smaller guys.
Brandon Carlo, Tri-City, 6'5", does he use it?
And then you've got a guy like Nick Merkley, who is short, you know, but uses his size and certainly doesn't get pushed around out there. So I think it's a little more complicated, and that's where you get scouts who really get into it versus just height, weight.
Friday's going to be fun.
Oh, Friday's going to be awesome. I've been looking forward to this draft for months.
This one's a curious one. I mean, it's bizarre because normally going into it, you know, the big excitement is about, you know, 1, 2, or 3. And in a lot of ways, well, 1 and 2 is done.
Well, the draft starts at 3 now.
Does it start at 3 or does it start at 4? Or do you say to yourself, Arizona's taking Dylan Strome, they need a center, they can't turn down a 6'3" guy who leads the OHL in scoring.
I still think there's some question marks at what Don Maloney does. I really do.
Really?
Yeah. I really do. I mean, I just don't know how you can pass up Hanifin. I really don't. But that's me.
What do you think, Damon?
Or Provorov.
A defenseman. I mean,
look at what
all
we just
have,
saw.
All
Who
you
were
have,
the two stars of the Stanley Cup final?
Yeah, Hedman and
Duncan Keith. And Victor Hedman.
And all you have to do is look at Seth Jones, who fell to 4.
And now, and say, he wouldn't today.
No, I mean, Dale, would you take Barkov or Seth Jones?
Well, and even more than that, Tampa Bay, would you take Seth Jones or Jonathan Drouin?
Yes.
You know, and Drouin, it's not a science.
That's why, to John's point, I know maybe.
You think Hanifin's done deal?
I don't know how you pass on Noah Hanifin.
Neither do I.
Like, I'm with John on this.
Unless you're like Ivan Provorov.
Unless
maybe
to me it's Hanifin or Provorov.
But this is where the genius and the brilliance of scouting really comes into it, because you've got to have people on your staff who can look at a 17-year-old who was the youngest player ever to dress for Boston College and played against 20, 21, 22-year-old players all year and played well. Mm-hmm. You have to evaluate him
in all situations
against
too.
A Russian kid who played in Wilkes-Barre, moved over to Cedar Rapids, came up and played in the dub, had as many points as any rookie in the dub, and is 2 inches shorter. Good luck. It's apples and oranges, and you got to pick the best one.
Yep, it's a lot easier behind this microphone than at that draft table, certainly. Yeah. I mean, what's the biggest question mark for you guys going into Friday?
Oh, how many trades there are. To Bob Murray's point about moving up, there are 20 guys saying I want to move up, more so than any time in recent history.
I want to know where the goalie goes. Ilya Samsonov just changed agents. Igor Larionov, lots of mystery about him. I like those Those mysterious
Edmonton,
places.
Minnesota,
yeah. Detroit, for Detroit.
Down the that's another great one as well. All right, thanks for joining us on this extended edition of Hockey Central at Noon. Back tomorrow at 12 with more hockey discussion right here on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Network, simulcast stateside on the NHL Network.